Joe.
Hi.
So tonight, again, we're doing a completely different series that we haven't covered before, and I'm very excited. Are you excited, Joe?
Well, I said to you at the end of our last recording that I had absolute faith of the heart going into this. Well, I shall have to tell you, after watching this episode 1.5 times, I no longer have faith of the heart. I don't have any faith whatsoever.
It's not great.
I'm just going to put this out there before we even start talking about Enterprise. This is our first dud. Okay.
Yeah. I don't think we've done a really crappy episode before.
No.
I guess what the previous, maybe the previous contender is Lineage, which has lots of sort of crummy bits in it.
Tons of positives in there. It's like Doctor, Seven of Nine, Janeway, you know, loads of good stuff happening. Yeah. But do you know what? This wasn't even like bad. It was just competently, dreadfully boring.
Yeah. So I put on the website bio that Enterprise Series 1 was when I actually stopped kind of watching 90s Trek or
Why
new
was
90s
that?
Trek. Well, I was trying to think about that today, and it's like 2001 or whenever it came out to Australia, it may have been a little bit later, and it just wasn't that possible to kind of catch up. If I decided I wasn't going to watch it one week or whatever, then I was kind of out. With Voyager, I had actually bought it on videotapes, like when it first showed. Like, I bought all of the videotapes all the way through.
Is that when they were coming out, like, two per tape?
Two, yep. Yeah, they're all in landfill now.
Think about it in this day and age, two per tape.
But even when Star Trek: The Next Generation came out on DVD, I remember paying like $300 or $400 for one season of it. I mean, it was crazy. Yeah, so I just didn't really have the opportunity. I just wasn't that inclined. And I may have said before, I have tried to watch Series 1 again and just never kind of got into it. And I think there's fun to be had eventually, am I right?
Yeah, well, I said to you last time that I found Enterprise to be a tale of two halves. And don't get me wrong, there's still some duds in the second half of Enterprise, but it's more ambitious in its second half and it's more fun.
Yeah.
Like, the first two seasons are just dreary television. I'm sure you've got some theories. I don't know what they were going for with this series. I don't know what they were thinking. And I said to you before we press record, it's like they disregarded everything they learned from the first 300 odd episodes of Star Trek. Like, they took none of that knowledge with them and were like, how can we make this as vanilla as it can possibly be? And then they created Series 1 of Enterprise.
Yeah, I do have some theories about what's going on, and I might need your help me a little bit about the sort of key players involved as well.
Okay.
All right. So I am, as always, kind of queued up on the very first frame, ready to press play. Are you ready to go, Joe?
I generally say that I am salivating to get going. I'll say I'm ready.
Yeah. Okay, well, in that case, I will count us in. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And we're off. And it's the termites of Larrakis Prime.
Now, what is it Larrakis Prime on Vulcan?
I have literally no idea. I'm assuming it's another planet. Yeah. But
Because she's learning about Vulcans, isn't she? Because of T'Pol, and she's eating Vulcan food. So I figured this was all about her trying to reach out.
Unless T'Pol has a sort of termite thing going as well, and she's trying to impress her that way. So is Cutler and Novakovich. And Cutler will be in two more episodes before her untimely death. The actress's untimely death in 2003. So the character doesn't come back.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And Novakovich was originally going to be killed in this episode, but they decided against it, but he never comes back anyway.
Well, so it might have brightened things up a little bit if he had been.
Yeah, we'll talk about that when it comes, because they certainly play it like he's dead, and there's a reason for that. So this is kind of Star Trek back to its absolute bare bones, isn't it? There's a real attempt to kind of shed all of the Star Trek-ness that's accumulated. So it's not that they've forgotten the lessons that they've learned. I think they're actively rejecting them. And so this is a version
of, well, why would you do that?
I think that what they're trying to do is be more accessible. And I think they're trying to be a bit less – I think they're trying to have a bit less latex in the regular cast.
They're literally trying to take the Star Trek out of this because they take it out of the title.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's more evidence. Like, they call it Enterprise for Series 1 and 2. And, you know, that's a reasonable title for a Star Trek series, but it's the first time that they've taken Star Trek out of the title. So there's a real attempt. Look at these uniforms. You know, part of the fun of Star Trek is it's a bunch of people traveling around the galaxy in their pajamas. And we adore that. You know, like, that's delightful.
Now, these people look like plumbers, don't they? They're like these bizarre overalls that they wear.
That's it.
But also as well, like, do you know what the most interesting thing about Star Trek is generally, and the best characters are generally the alien characters, and they take that out of this and have a primarily human crew, most of whom are incredibly tedious.
Yeah,
Sorry, go on.
The return of white men to the center of the action as well.
Oh, we're definitely going to talk about that, Nathan.
But before we do that, it's been a long time from there to here.
No.
I absolutely.
It's been a long time.
I have to admit.
Now my time is finally here. Do you know what? All right. I think it's obscene that the skip intro button is on Netflix.
And you're not allowed to touch it.
This is the one time I'm very pleased it's there.
Well, I sing every time I watch Enterprise, which is not often, but I do sing it. And it is, you know, again, it's a rejection of what we've done in Star Trek before with the sort of big orchestral sort of things. And what we have instead is this sort of dadcore, you know, kind of soft
rock. Could they have chosen a more... dull song.
It's so fucking easy listening. Do you know what I mean? Like it.
You know what's the terrible thing? It's like the song itself is terrible, but then the bit at the end where it's like, I've got it. It's so bad. It's so awful.
But then the other thing is this, right? That there's the HMS Enterprise, which is presumably a colonial English ship that is being sent out to kind of beat the hell out of some natives and take all their stuff and their
land. That's exactly what Picard was doing in series one of Next Generation.
Yeah. And then there's a series, I think there's Amelia Earhart, but I'm not quite sure. But otherwise, it's just all white men doing heroic things in our history. And so there's a real proper attempt, I think, to center them after having a black man and a white woman as the captains in the last two series.
This is all like pre-Federation, isn't it? Because the whole series was supposed to lead up to the founding of the Federation. Because in the last episode, you see Riker and Troy watching Archer at that ceremony. So that's where this series was heading, like eventually.
Yeah.
And they scale back on all the technology as well, isn't it? It's like all of this stuff is being like used for the very first time.
Yeah.
They're in space for the first time. So it's them kind of trying to adjust to that. Like, those aren't bad ideas, but just how it's all executed is.
Well, but maybe they are bad ideas. And maybe the reason is that we have at this point seen no less than 1,258 away missions on Star Trek, which is a number that I just made up. And
oh,
so,
my God, I thought you knew that.
I counted them all. Oh, yeah. Porthos. I love Porthos. But.
No, excuse me. Hang on. We need to talk about that dog. All right. And
look,
I know you're a dog.
It's going
lover,
where no dog has gone before. That's my favorite joke.
No. But you know what, right? This is, I just can't bear this because they put the dog in there, right? Because that's like Archer's one likable trait. He's a dog owner, you know? So automatically we're supposed to think he's a nice guy and he's just horrid.
Don't you think he's the Neelix of this series? Porthos?
Who, Archer?
Oh, no, Porthos.
No, the dog's quite cute, but then they start doing episodes about the bloody dog.
So, but again, he's like a man and his dog, and here they all are wearing fucking baseball caps and stuff, and it's trying its best to be.
Here we go.
Yeah,
this is our first example of the space racism that we're going to see in this story,
and that's the other thing as well. So T'Pol is positioned as being sort of no fun and, you know, she's not relaxed and they're all men and, you know, they won't be told. And she's constantly being belittled and put down. And she's absolutely right, literally all of the time. And I developed a theory while I was watching this.
I know what this is.
That this script would be massively improved if every single one of her lines ended with the words, "You fucking idiot." And you just wait when she's talking to these mediocre white men, how well it fits. It's incredible.
Oh, they are mediocre, aren't they? I can't even tell you. Okay, I've seen half of the Enterprise episodes, okay? At least half of them, yeah?
Yeah.
I can't tell you what the con officer's name is.
That's Travis Mayweather.
See, I always call him Merryweather. See, I don't even know what his name is. This is how dull these people are.
I've forgotten Malcolm's last name until today. So I'm in a similar position.
When I watched Broken Bow, they treated the Vulcans and how aggressive they were towards them.
Yeah.
And then into the first couple of episodes on the ship with T'Pol, I was like, this is actively unpleasant to watch. Like, I am not going to watch this show. And that was the reason why.
Well,
and I don't think that the writers, like, they're not criticizing it. They're actually promoting it.
Yeah, I don't think that they think that's bad. They think that T'Pol is uptight and overly cautious. And even though this episode proves that T'Pol was right all along and that they were foolish to go down here without surveying it properly because things go wrong, there is never a moment where Archer acknowledges that and apologizes. And there is a scene, we'll get to it, but there's basically nearly no apology from Trip either. And so it's not here to critique their behavior at all. We're supposed to be on their side. And like this, look, this is the same set where B'Elanna and her racist father went camping in that Voyager.
Where Worf and Dax went on their mission in DS9. This is standard stock forest set number 5.
And that's the other thing too, because there's nothing going on in this episode. It's incredibly thin. But, like, they don't do anything to make it visually impressive. You know, they wander around some places in Southern California.
Which, I wouldn't even object to that if they were doing interesting things with the characters or really getting us to understand the characters. But they do that thing they do all the time in Star Trek. They did it in DS9. They did it in The Next Generation, of them behaving out of character before we've gotten to know them.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Which, again, I think is a very bizarre creative choice. This could be a nice, intimate character tale where they kind of, you know, where they are at loggerheads with T'Pol, and by the end of it, they've kind of figured out how to work together and you know, they're developing those characters. There's none of that going on here.
No.
This is about this boring away mission and, you know, like the atmospherics that happen and someone being possessed. You know, it's like stock standard Trek cliches number 1, 2, and 3.
And it's not even very high concept either. I mean, it is just they get drugged on hallucinogenic pollen. You know, like, it's not that interesting.
We've done that before. I think we've definitely done that before at some point.
We did it in Doctor Who one time, I think. But I mean, this, you know, it's so visually uninteresting. And one of the things that they had the opportunity to do, I think, is, you know, if they're going to scale everything back and if they're going to change, you know, if they're moving away from the 24th century world that they've been in for, what, 21 seasons at this point, to do something about the way the show is produced, but it still looks just like Star Trek. And we're not going to feel a sense of awe at an away mission that just looks the same as the away missions we've seen before. And that's the problem. I think if it had looked visually spectacular, if this planet had been weird, you know, like they're just on the planet Southern California, it's just not that interesting.
Do you know why? No, I have a theory why. Now, this series is the love child of Rick Berman and Brannon Braga. And yep. In series 1 to 3, they wrote like a prestigious amount of the scripts, the two of them. I think it's over half. And that's a lot. That's like Terry Nation in Blake 7 series 1, you know, a lot. And they've been working on Star Trek since early TNG.
Yeah.
And they're creatively exhausted. Like, they don't have anything else to give. And that really does show in series 1 and 2, where they're just knocking out the same old cliches. And, like, even when they try and do things, they start bringing in the Borg and things like that. And it's like, oh, guys, you know, you've been doing this for 21 seasons, you know? Like,
yeah.
I don't know. I think maybe after Voyager, Trek should have been rested at that point.
Yeah. Look, I mean, there are people who love Enterprise and you know, eventually some good comes of it, I think. Yeah.
Are you
yeah,
sure about that?
I think
are
so.
Sure?
And I think, you know, there's been references to Enterprise in Kurtzman Trek, and there are more to come.
No.
Yeah.
What?
So,
do you remember any?
No, but I know that they've, well, I mean, there's even a reference. I mean, they shoot scenes on the bridge in Star Trek Beyond. There's a character from an Andorian subspecies who's introduced in Enterprise who is going to be a regular in Strange New Worlds.
Okay.
So they do reference it. So it is, you know, it's still Star Trek.
It is still Star Trek, but let's be honest, it is like the back end of, you know, probably the most successful iteration of Star Trek. And people kind of talk about it apologetically now, yeah. Don't they? Nobody really goes, oh, yeah, Enterprise, you know, what a meteoric success at the end of Berman Trek.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Go, it does fizzle out.
Enterprise, that happens.
I didn't know before that Series 3, they thought they were being cancelled. You told me this.
Which is why they went for, like, this mad season-long arc, which is hugely one of the most ambitious things I'd say that Trek's ever done, maybe until Discovery came along, that first season of Discovery. And they figured that was going to be the end, and then they had a reprieve and a full series. But like you said to me before, it's like they've forgotten how to pace Star Trek as well.
Yeah.
Like so many of these season one episodes, including this one, they're so slow. It makes original Trek look pacey.
Well, I mean, can I just comment here on the blokiness of this and the sort of pathetic failure to be blokey as well? Because
what's that guy's name, by the way?
This is that Malcolm Reed, the weapons Malcolm dude guy? Oh,
isn't he a terrible character?
Yeah, like, no, he's shockingly bad. But there's nothing to him. But just the sort of sports metaphor thing, like he comes in and says something jolly about sports ball, and it's water polo, for God's sake. Like, you're not playing rugby, so shut up. And, and yeah, you're not that much of a man. And just,
I look great in rugby shorts, you know.
I bet you do. It just seems like a sort of gross, blokey kind of hostile work environment. It really is super unpleasant. Like, I just think everyone's massively unlikable and increasingly
so. But I think, like, what happened with Enterprise, and you're right, is you've got two white middle-aged men writing this show, like the creative force behind it. Now, over at, like, DS9, even on Voyager, there was a lot more people involved with plotting out the series, and there was, like, a proper writer's room for both those series. Whereas this is kind of their vision, and it's their voice, you know?
Yeah.
This is what we're hearing. This kind of very heterosexual, very masculine way of exploring the universe.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. I think that's it. And I think the reason that we go back to, you know, the 22nd century is because the 24th century has been established to be kind of diverse and peaceful and cosmopolitan. And we want a sort of George W. Bush era version of Star Trek at this point. And so we cast Scott Bakula to look puzzled, you know, like
even that is obscene, because Scott Bakula is the most charismatic man. You go watch him on William Shatner's The Captains, and he's riding his horse, and he's personable, and he's funny, and he's got a guitar, and he's singing. And I'm like, well, who the hell is this? Because that's not who we saw on Enterprise. All we saw on Enterprise was this very tedious lecturing bully, you know?
Yeah. There's a really, really unpleasant scene, which I'm going to point out in a minute, where I think he's just fucking horrible.
Did you watch Quantum Leap?
Yeah. Not religiously.
How likable he was in that. How can you make Scott Bakula unlikable?
Yeah.
With some effort is the answer.
Yeah, and it's a deliberate creative choice, I think. You know, it's very strange.
I'm going to say something positive now, though.
Oh, I can't do that.
I don't like him here. I don't like him early on, but I do quite like who Trip becomes.
Right, okay.
And the romance that he has with T'Pol is really nicely done.
Right.
And we'll get to some of those episodes later on. Yeah. I think you'll buy it. And there's like a warmth that develops between them, which is really, really lovely. Like, maybe they were going for that. Maybe they were going for all this antagonism at the start. So then that's the development, is that they develop friendships, relationships, blah, blah, blah. You know, we go on that sort of journey with them. But it's so unlikable at the start. I know tons of people that just flew away from the show saying, no, I don't want to watch this.
Well, look, I mean, to be fair, if we were watching episode 3 or 4, depending on how you count it, of Star Trek The Next Generation, we'd be yelling at it as well. But...
Are you kidding me? If we were watching episodes 23 or 24 of The Next Generation, we'd be wanting to chip out.
See, this CG is not very good, is it? This rock people... It's so
been done before, isn't it? All of it.
It just looks crummy as well. It looks really crummy. They're not quite up to doing it yet. And even though it's sort of...
Do you remember we watched Forget Me Not a couple of episodes back, and we were down on True and how visually engaging that was?
Yeah.
But they had the effects at this point. It wouldn't be as crisp as it was in Forget Me Not, but they if they had the imagination, you know, palette to do it, then it could be that exciting to watch.
There is some sort of computer generated landscapes in this episode, and they look terrible. Like, they look so appallingly fake, and we'll laugh at one of them in a minute. I mean, even this cliff, I mean, Jesus Christ, what could be more dull than this? They go wandering in the night in the storm, and suddenly there's a cliff.
I think this is the cave, you know, I could list 20 episodes where they filmed in this cave.
Are we hiding from the silicon entity? Or, what's it called? Crystalline entity. God help
me. Remember when Kira was turning into a massive crystal?
Jesus Christ.
That was in this cave as
Heart
well.
Heart of Stone? Is that what that's called?
Yeah. Oh, I love that episode. I really love it.
It's so ridiculous. But yeah, so it's just in the same sets that they've been doing this shit in for like 10 years or whatever, or 20 years. Like, 20 years, 15 years, whatever. It's just tedious.
You remember earlier when we were talking about how appalling they are towards T'Pol?
Yeah.
T'Pol.
Yeah.
T'Pol. What's even more annoying, is she is hideously unlikable at this point. It's like lose-lose on both sides.
But I sympathize with her because they're such assholes that's the demeanor that I would be taking as well. I think I have a lot of sympathy for her. I think I actually kind of like the way she shuts Cutler down when in that early scene she says, oh, I've been drinking Plomeek soup or whatever, and she says, go and phase the oscillators or some damn thing.
I don't want to know you. All right.
you stupid people.
But it's so appalling because you remember in the second episode, right, where they're it might have even been in Broken Bell, where they're doing the decontamination chamber scenes and they have to all get down to their underwear and they're all massaging gel into each other in the most unerotic way possible. It's like people rubbing KY jelly into you. I mean, it's just obscene. But they're trying to sexualize her from the off, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, the show had been like massively sexless since sort of Roddenberry started to stand back from it. And it was always sort of sexy in a sort of incredibly creepy Roddenberry way when it was sexy, like The Naked Now.
Not on DS9, you know, on DS9, they had an episode where everyone turned up at the infirmary. And Bashir kept saying, "What happened? Oh, I'm going to stop asking that question. They've all been at it and they've all got injuries."
Oh my God, that sounds terrible.
Oh no, it's hilarious. Dax and Wolf come in, they're covered in bruises.
Oh dear, oh dear. Well, we did have Keiko and Miles banging in the episode that we did.
No, they cut away from that, remember.
They dissolved, crossfaded to avoid it. So again, now, you know, like we're all in the sets talking and stuff like that, and this brave new era of Star Trek is looking very much like the most boring bits of the previous era, I think.
You're not wrong. But also as well, do you not think it's just fundamentally flawed to have a prequel series set at this point? Like, what can they do with this?
But you see, I don't think it matters. And one of the reasons for that is that I think Discovery works, even though it's set 10 years before Star Trek, and they get out of it. But I think that series...
They absolutely jumped away from it being a prequel series, didn't they? Yeah. They went into the future.
Yeah.
And in this, they went into the Expanse in Series 3.
Yeah.
Because I think in both series, they were like, well, we're going to rock the boat too much if we keep doing this.
Well, you see, I think part of the problem too is that it's cheaper to have a ship-based show, and it sort of promised in a way a little bit that it would kind of tell us about the 22nd century and how humanity joins the Federation and stuff. And it can't deliver on that, can it? Because we're just a ship traveling through space, having adventures and solving problems. It's just never, ever going to lead to that. And so kind of what's the point? I mean, Discovery is using a known time period to comment on the period in American history kind of starting at 2001, when this goes out, up to the sort of Trump era. But it's doing that in the context of a war that we know about from Star Trek lore. So that's why it's set there. I mean, this is set around events that we know happen, but it turns out that they're not very interesting. I mean, how do you get a Federation together? A lot of people talking in rooms with,
Star Trek for you, isn't it?
No, but I mean like conferences and, you know, and all of that sort of thing. Like it's not fun TV and they're never going to do
literally,
that.
Literally in season 4, it literally comes to that where you've got, what's his name? The mayor, Harry Gronick from Buffy, as this politician who's bringing together all these people into this big chamber. And it is literally just a load of meetings. And you're like,
That's it. It's always going to be that, isn't it?
The most interesting thing they did away from season 3, which was completely outside of Enterprise's own kind of mythology that it was building, because it was in another region of space. In season 4, they had a group of extremists that were systematically trying to remove all aliens from Earth. They were like xenophobes, and they were trying to make, you know, Earth. I can't remember what they were called now, Earthists or something like that.
The Republican Party.
But it was done over the season, so very subtly. You realise that there were less and less aliens on Earth, and then in the end, obviously they take down this extremist group, and then that's supposed to lead into, you know, we're going to embrace alien life, create this Federation, and you know, and it was just, and then the axe came down, and they said, we're not making any more, and we're going to end it on a TNG episode instead.
Yeah, as a farewell to Berman Trek rather than a farewell to Enterprise itself.
Which did not go down well, did it?
No, and I can kind of understand that, I guess.
Nathan, I can't help but notice we're commenting very little on the content of this episode.
So this is a thing that they've done where we don't really have the transporter, and so we're transporting Novakovic back up to Enterprise with no definite article, and he's covered in plants. They're embedded in him, which I think is actually kind of pretty cool. Okay, so this is super unpleasant because now Tucker is under the influence of the hallucinogenic thing, and he is absolutely openly racist to T'Pol.
Yeah.
Like, and he's
but also as well, look at how this is acted and shot. Like, I'm watching this with the sound down, and he looks like a drunken man, coming at a white woman, in an abusive way.
He threatens to split her in half at one point. Like, he does threaten to get violent with her. He is pointing a gun at her, and it's really, really unpleasant to watch. And at this point, T'Pol doesn't seem to realize that there's a drug involved, and just sort of thinks that he's, you know, just a massive asshole, I think, at this point. And then just look at the sort of inept way these other two characters are sidelined. So, like, Travis and Cutler are just sitting against the you know, the Jabalite wall, going to sleep or something. They're overcome with something.
What's his name again? Merriweather?
Yeah, Travis Merriweather.
No, not Mayweather.
Mayweather, not Merriweather.
See?
You've got me doing it.
We'll get it right when we finish the episodes. No, we won't, because he never gets to do anything.
No.
This is the most I think he does.
Yeah, they completely sideline him. And he's got some backstory. He's a boomer, which doesn't mean what it means now, but that's not a very interesting characteristic.
I think in the 4 years, you know, he gets one episode, which is about him. Whereas, you know, T'Pol, you know, the three who rule, T'Pol, Archer, and who's the other one? Trip.
Yeah.
They get tons. Do you think this scene is kind of considered acceptable because she's not scared, because she's, you know, stony-faced and completely not bothered by how he's behaving.
Yeah, I think if she was frightened, it would be worse. But it still doesn't stop one of our main characters and the second most important character on the show, probably, from appearing just like an absolute horrible racist asshole. Now, let's talk about Dr. Phlox.
Oh, can I just say a moment for Dr. Phlox, who is absolutely the MVP of Enterprise?
He's really good, isn't he? He's really great.
Everything he touches, every scene he touches is just gold.
Yeah,
John Billingsley is charming in a way that none of the other regulars are.
Yeah, he really is.
And guess what? He's the alien character.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the other alien character, I guess, but he's someone that we've never seen before. And again, you know, he is over against the kind of white heterosexuality of the kind of crew because he has, does he have wives and husbands and things?
They're like polygamous, isn't he? He's got a wife and a husband. Yeah. And his wife, in one brilliant episode, his wife comes onto the ship, right? And she comes on to Trip, and he's like, oh my God. And he's like, I'm going to have to tell Dr. Flo. And so he goes and tells him, and he's like, yes, well, did you enjoy her?
No,
and he does weird things with his tongue, and spikes come out of his head, and they're just having fun with that character in a way they don't with the others, you know?
No, and he's really good. And there's a scene where he has to do some like proper serious acting in a minute, which I think is the most interesting scene there, because you can actually see Bakula, you can visibly see Bakula struggling against the script and trying to make Archer not an asshole. And it, you know, like it's a thing. Even this scene, right, where Phlox has identified the name of the chemical and Archer can't say it. Like, Phlox says it and Archer, like, tries to say it and then has to get Phlox to help him. And that's because he's stupid. And that's, do you know what I mean? It's kind of like, we don't want him to be a threat. We don't want him to be not relatable because he's very smart. And so we'll make him, like, this sort of schlubby half-wit. And, you know, like, I'm sure that this is not the direction the show, you know, eventually settles on, but it is kind of disappointing, I think.
Well, you think of DS9, think of Voyager, yeah, Sisko and Janeway. Now, I'm not saying they're perfect characters, but they were hugely likable, weren't they? They were like, you wanted to watch them and you wanted to watch their interactions with the crew. I don't really want to watch Archer. And that's a problem. He's the main character on this show.
Yeah.
I just want to say two things about Trip. One, unfortunately, he does make me weak because I think he's super hot.
Yeah.
And two, he is acting these scenes really well. He's a terrific actor, Connor Trinick. And he generally gets like the big emotional episodes. Like, do you remember did you ever see the one where there's a clone of him?
Who's
grown and falls in love with Tamar. And it's a really fantastic episode, and basically down to his acting.
Right.
So I think he becomes a good character, but these are very humble beginnings for him.
Yeah. So it takes them a while, I think. But all of this, you can see it reacting against the previous 21 series of New Trek, I think.
You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of Stargate Universe, where they did exactly the same thing. So you had Atlantis and you had SG-1, which were great, big, camp, fun Stargate shows. And then they decided to make Stargate human. So we went off into another region of space with a mostly human cast. The pace slowed right down, and it was supposed to be about the characters. And guess what? They took out all the fun of Stargate, and it was really boring.
I mean,
welcome to Star Trek Enterprise.
One of the things this show does, though, is that it embraces original Trek in a way that the others hadn't quite done that.
I mean, eventually it does.
Yeah.
It does. It takes until series four, I think, to truly embrace TOS.
Yeah, I guess at this point it's just a sort of sequel to First Contact or something, you know.
But don't you think as well the technology looks really boring? Like think of Discovery and that, and you know, the spore drive and the weird, you know, frisbee ship that flips around and things like that. You know, like super, super fun to watch.
These sets are so boring. So I think this scene here between Archer and Phlox is really good. And you can see, look, Phlox is almost on the verge of tears. You can just see that in his performance. He's really, really upset. And he's blaming himself because Novakovic, who died in the original draft, looks like he's going to die, right? And so he's super abashed. He can't look Archer in the eye. He's clearly, clearly upset and blaming himself. And Archer does absolutely nothing about it. Archer doesn't say, there was no way you could have known. He yells, and now here, Archer looks back and just thinks, oh, you know, maybe I'm a bit of a prick, and, you know, he looks sad, but then he walks off because, and I think that is Bakula trying to soften the blow. You know, like, Phlox is upset, Archer's yelling about his stranded crew people, then he walks out, looks across, looks kind of slightly regretful, and then walks off.
What an arsehole.
Yeah, he's really horrible.
I don't think it was scheduling issues that stopped you from watching this, you know.
Maybe
I think
not.
You took one look at some of these characters and thought, no, I'm out.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, I was a little bit annoyed to Pol because I thought she was probably just a sort of 7 of 9 knockoff, which in a sense she was.
She kind of is at this point.
Yeah.
She does do it. And in series three, they do what could have been an agonizing, she's like addicted to drugs.
Right.
In series three.
I can't remember this.
So she experiences a whole range of emotions, which opens out the performance of, was it Jolene
Blaylock?
Yeah.
Blaylock.
And now the Tronya. No, sorry. I'll never stop saying that. But I just think she's incredibly like mundane to watch in the first couple of years.
I do love that we've got to the point where Trip now doesn't want to take an injection because it's not going to do any good, and there's a conspiracy around trying to get him to have an injection, which works really well for a kind of, you know, from a modern point of view, it's very timely.
Wouldn't it, this is completely away from the episode, but would have been the ideal Trek show to have had a gay male character in? With all these men in the cast. You know?
But that's the point. The point is it's reacting against the kind of diversity that we had. And remember, it was a diversity that didn't include gay and lesbian people, because I think that he wants to make the show more accessible. They want to make the show more accessible, and they want to do it by making it a bit more all-American and a bit less cosmopolitan. They don't want a French guy as the captain. They don't want someone who likes classical music. They want some
They're making it accessible to the wrong people. It is kind of diametrically opposed to what Star Trek is supposed to be about.
Yeah, that's right. And I don't think it sticks, and it absolutely doesn't work, because 3 years in and they're going to be cancelled because no one's watching. Holy crap,
look at
these
that terrible
look
CGI.
Like shit, don't they?
Do you know what they look like? They look like, do you remember that episode where Abraham Lincoln's floating in space in front of and there's that massive turd monster? That's what they look
That's
like.
That's what they are.
Except the turd monster smoked and had glowing eyes and was amazing.
Hey, the other thing too is that Star Trek is normally done... I said before, Star Trek doesn't do sort of German expressionism. It what we see on screen is supposed to be what's happening. And certainly, you know, some episodes play with that, and modern Trek has got completely away from that. But here, you know, we're supposed to kind of, it's sort of the default setting is if Trip sees rock monsters, they're really there, because that's the way stories are normally told on Star Trek. And so to discover that they're not real, I don't know whether that's interesting or not, but it is a thing.
Do you know as well, right, aesthetically, yeah, we watched the Corbomite maneuver before this, didn't we? Which had that like weird floating object in the sky and that crazy set at the end and that bizarre bald kid with the huge eyebrows. And just like weird, fun, crazy stuff, right? And this is supposed to be set just before that.
And there's nothing fun about it.
It couldn't look more plain in comparison. Yeah.
Well, and I think there's a level of embarrassment about just the nonsense that Star Trek eventually becomes. You know, like if you think about the way that Lower Decks looks affectionately at how silly the whole kind of idea of Star Trek is, and you know, makes fun of all the sort of crazy crap that goes on. But that's why we're watching it. You know, like if you're embarrassed by that, if you want a show that's more realistic or whatever, I think you're just watching the wrong thing.
For you and me, right, I think, like, remember we talked about your list of DS9 episodes and you went for a lot of, like, the fun ones, the comedy ones, the ones where they're a bit silly, I think that's absolutely, like, you're in for some of Star Trek. And there's none of that here. So you're going to struggle with this. My in to Star Trek is interesting characters.
Yeah.
And their relationships. And there's really none of that here as well. And you and I, okay, we're both white, but we're not heterosexual men, are we?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Like, no wonder we struggle with this. Do you think there's an audience for this?
Well, it turns out no. I mean, you know, like, look, I mean, we're still watching it, and it is Star Trek, and we're interested in Star Trek, not just as a fun thing to watch.
We are watching this because our randomizer forced us to do it.
But also, you know, like, we love Star Trek and we're interested in where it goes. And so it's the same way that you and I watch Doctor Who. Like, we love Doctor Who, but there are bits of it we like more than others. But also, we're interested in how the show gets made and what's happening at the time and what it's reacting to and kind of what's going on. And I think, you know, this episode has at least given us that to talk about.
What is interesting is in series 3, where they suddenly go all out ambitious, is they're basically acknowledging that this isn't working.
Yeah, yeah.
They push it. And in series 4, when we go back to, you know, Earth and the Alpha Quadrant, they don't start doing this again. They are doing, you know, big three-part arcs. They're setting up continuity for TOS in a big way. It's a weird Blind Alley series one and two of Enterprise.
Well, I mean, I think Deep Space Nine reinvents itself sort of fairly regularly, but
it takes its building blocks with it.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. It doesn't sort of throw stuff out. And I think it does it more skillfully, perhaps, than this. And also we've got the benefit of hindsight and looking at the whole 7 years and seeing how successful those various reinventions are.
I swear, I didn't even see how that resolved then. How did they
save the day? She shoots him with a gun. So Captain Archer tells him a lie and persuades him to put his weapon down, to trust him and put his weapon down, and then she shoots him with a gun. And then
boring.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, I do keep using that word. But this is like the first away mission, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. And so again, look, here we are, Southern California, super boring looking, now back in the standing cave set that is just, you know, in one of the hangars. And so this scene too, so notice that he rejected the water that she brought before because he thought it was poisoned. Now he's drinking the water to indicate that he's okay. There's a cute line, which could have been actually played slightly better, where he says, "You didn't shoot me last night." And she says, "I'm afraid I did," which is kind of fun. And this is the scene where we need some kind of acknowledgement that she was right all along.
Yeah.
And also an apology for the racism. We didn't mention the thing where she's speaking in Vulcan and Trip starts threatening her for speaking in Vulcan, like some arsehole on a bus yelling at, you know, like the woman wearing the hijab or something. You know, like those YouTube videos of people being racist to people speaking Spanish on the train or something. You know, it's super horribly uncomfortable to watch.
What's interesting about what happens with her character is she basically goes over to the other side. She starts behaving like them and rejecting Vulcan culture.
Right.
So she's assimilated into their racism, you know?
Right, right. But here Trip tells her a story about the biology teacher who was Vulcan, whom he hallucinated before and who scared him when he was a kid at school and who told him he should challenge his kind of prejudices or whatever. And the two actors are playing it as if it was the scene that needed to be written, you know. But it's not that scene. It's not an apology. It's nothing. No one's learned anything. But and this shocking
CGI,
it's so bad.
Like, they've done better than that, you know.
Yeah, they have done better than that. That scene of Cutler with the sun on her face is actually quite nice, bless her. And then the episode just fizzles out. We haven't learned anything, and we're still massive space racists.
I'm wondering if at this point, because the second episode was a bit of a nothing episode as well. I think that was Hoshi learning alien languages and weird stuff happening there. Oh, wow. The third episode has started and Archie's in the shower. immediately my interest has peaked up, but that's a different episode entirely. Yeah, you're absolutely right. The end of that episode, that it reaches no conclusions about anyone's behavior. So what was the point of it?
Yeah, what's it about? It's not about anything. It's just about the first away mission, and it's not that interesting an away mission, and it's not solved in a clever way.
They're not even learning about, like, any culture on the planet or anything like that. Is this the most insubstantial Star Trek episode?
it's certainly one of them. It is. It's puzzling how little there is to it, I think. Yeah, and what there is often a bit unpleasant.
Well, what I can tell you is this: I have seen a lot more Enterprise than you, and there are way better episodes of this to come. Now, I know we have shat on this episode and the series from a great height for the last hour, and if you're a massive Enterprise fan, you know, apologies.
Yeah, you're not still listening.
I will reiterate, it does get better than this, you know, yeah. And they do learn how to make good telly. It just takes 2 years, you know.
So we are currently on untitledstartrekproject.com/randomizer to pick our next Star Trek episode. And I've come up with the principle that we're going to use to choose which series we're going to do. But can you explain it to the listeners at home, Joe?
We have decided that we want to do a second episode of a series that we've already covered.
Yeah, it's not just that we are trying to avoid Star Trek the Animated Series, is it? It's not a...
Not at all.
No.
I haven't seen any of that, so I'm intrigued by Star Trek the Animated Series.
We'll have to do one soon. It's really terrible. All right.
I reckon as well what we should do for once, right, just for once, is whatever we get.
The first time around
is what we do.
Yeah, well, let's not do that this time. Well, maybe. So the selected series are all of the Berman Treks.
Yeah.
So TNG, DS9, Voyager, and Enterprise, the original series, and Discovery, which we've all done an episode of.
Before I push the gun, I've got a question for you.
Yeah.
What's been your favorite series to talk about so far?
I have to say that I enjoyed the Voyager episode because I thought it was a bit of a crummy episode initially, but it turned out to be more interesting than I initially thought. And I think that was kind of fun. But the episode that we've done that I've enjoyed the most has been Forget Me Not. I think it's the best episode of Star Trek that we've done. Even beating out yesterday's Enterprise, I think.
I've been completely thrown because I figured talking about the original series was going to be a bit of a challenge. And I just adore talking about the Corp Mind Maneuver. There was Kurt with his shirt off and Latronia.
It's so glorious.
Okay. All right. So my finger is hovering over the button if you are ready.
Off you go. Press the button.
Oh, my word.
Oh, what is it? Is it good? It's yesterday's Enterprise again.
This was on your top 10 DS9 list.
Oh, what is it?
It's Take Me Out to the Holosuite.
Can we do that? Let's do that.
Which, interestingly, I watched this week.
What do you think?
Oh, my God, that was sad. How fun would that be to talk about?
I think we do it.
Wow. Okay, yeah, let's do it. Let's do it.
Let's not fool about. We both want to do it.
Just in case anyone isn't aware of what that's about, that is the DS9 episode that during a long, bloody war, they decide to take time out to play a game of baseball.
Yeah. Is there racism against the Vulcans again? Maybe a bit.
I think there is a running theme. But they try and give it some context in that. It's a bit labored, but
yeah. It's a very TV backstory, isn't it? So it's series 7, is it?
Series 7, episode 3. It's our third episode written by Ron Moore. Yesterday's Enterprise, he was involved in.
Yeah.
House of Quark. And this is Ron Moore, you know, completely going for the comedy jugular.
Brilliant. And another episode 3, which seems to be our pattern as well.
Oh, and it has Cassidy Yates in it as well. Oh, and we love Cassidy Yates.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You've been listening to Untitled Star Trek Project with Joe Ford and Nathan Bottomley. You can find us online at untitledstartrekproject.com, where you can find links to our Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube channel. Our podcast artwork is by Kayla Ciceron, and the theme was composed by Cameron Lamb. This episode was recorded on the 12th of November 2021 and released on the 10th of December. We'll see you next time for Deep Space Nine's Take Me Out to the Holosuite.